And there are definitely young girls who also, you know, it's a body type where you have a very slim waist and you have a very, very flat tummy and maybe the posterior is slightly larger. And maybe those girls for all those years thought that they had big bums. And after someone like Jennifer Lopez, they were able to look in the mirror and thought they looked fantastic. But Bev Malone is shaking her head. She's not so sure about that. Hello, darling.
Hello, darling.
How are you, Shvete?
Very good, and you?
Mm-hmm.
How are you, Mr. T? I'm listening to Rihanna losing weight, and I'm listening to Adele losing weight. And Adele's a soul singer,
for goodness
sake.
Is she losing weight? Tobbs loves her just the way she is.
Well, I think anyone with half a brain would love her just the way she
is.
She's a soul singer. Bring me the thin lounge singer. I mean, for goodness sake, who wants to hear about the jazz singer who has this really tiny, skinny little body? I mean, it just doesn't fit together. You want a buxom woman to deliver that music.
Beautiful.
Who's in her skin
voluptuous.
And in her body and not afraid to be.
It's about that.
Exactly. So for people to come out and make comments about their bodies, I mean, it's just like the Karen Carpenter story, isn't it? She was just fine until everyone told her she was the fat sister.
Shame. That's terrible.
So
Ronnie said a big ups to the Knesset for passing that law. We have a big enough problem with anorexia as it is. We don't need girls trying to have figures only attaining attainable by swallowing diet pills, taking drugs, and living on a lettuce leaf a day. As for the naturally thin models, good for them. That isn't the kind of concentration camp skinny we're talking about. Okay, I hear you, Ronnie. And good points.
Although I think we'll just have all these young girls watching these adverts and going, geez, I really don't want to be like that. So it doesn't really matter. It comes from the self-esteem. And I think that if one country passes the law, perhaps others will follow. But while we still have a plethora of opportunity to look around and see that the focus is without a doubt on looking slim, looking trim, looking good, fitting this model's figure, etc. It is very hard to be in your body when it doesn't fit that shape or profile. And one has to learn the difference between the external and the internal and how much sexier and fuller a man or woman is when they're in their body, whatever it looks like.
But you know what, Bev? It is a perception. It's looking in the mirror at a body, because what is a slim body is a healthy body. I'm not talking about a skinny body. I'm talking about a person who's eating properly, who's going to gym, who's living healthily, is going to look great. It doesn't matter if they're carrying an extra 5 kilograms here, if they've got a little bit of a bulge there. It's the perception that has to change. It's that you can look at someone and go, hey, she kind of looks like me and that's okay.
How That's about okay. people look in the mirror and are okay with what they see looking back because they know they've partly co-created that? And that is a reflection of where they are in their life right now. And
if you switch off TV and if you close magazines.
Well, I'm coming from the perspective of self-esteem, and I'm saying I think one has to be very careful to lend so much credence to anybody else telling you what is okay for you. If what you're doing is serving yourself and what you're doing is bringing no harm to others, and if you are friends with you, then there's a very good chance you'll be okay with whatever the reflection is. But as soon as your perception is that if I don't live up to the world standard, the community standard, the class standard, the cosmopolitan standard, I'm not enough, then we're coming from a place of self-esteem anyway, or obviously the lack thereof.
Mm.
It's a whole debate in itself, but we have families waiting to be
okay.
engineered.
Okay, so let's look at the first SMS here. We've said,
let's
please can you tell me about family dynamics? There's
family
three children.
Dynamics.
Boy, 24 November 2001. There's a girl, the 4th of July 2003. There's a boy, the 14th of December 2009. The father is the 25th of April 1976. And the mother is the 27th of December 1975. Go for it, Bev.
So I preface all of this by saying that this right here is an hour and a half, 2 hours on its own.
Mm-hmm.
I've done work in families where we've done the entire family of 5 children and 2 adults or 2 children and 2 adults, done them together and worked through every aspect of the dynamic, the individual, the mother, the father, their relationship, what that did, how that changed them, how they act as a couple independently to how they act on their own. What happened when the first child came into the marriage? What happened? That changes the dynamic of the family. What happened when the second child came? How did the children gang up energetically against the parents? What happens when the third child comes, etc.? This is a whole workshop on its own, and it's the best fun. I mean, I love it, and families get so much from it. So much insight and understanding of each other. And it's even better when the kids are teenagers, even better. Because there's so much room to go, yeah, you see, that's why I. And then they go, okay, I got it now, I got it. But it also helps people to get their heads out of their behinds and get moving forward rather than getting stuck in the schmutz of right now,
right,
you know?
Right.
So if we look at this family, and it's so interesting because we don't have the family itself sending it in, do we?
No, this is the grandmother.
Yes, this is the grandmother.
I chuckled
going,
to myself.
What is going on in this family?
It's my family. They're driving me mad.
Oh, I love it. Okay, so hopefully you don't have the mother listening to someone going, hey, I know this birthday. That's sounding oddly familiar. So, right, let's look at this. Let's look at this. So the mom and dad get together and they meet and it's like kismet. Like, oh, my goodness, we've known each other for centuries. How nice it is to be together. Together again, and it was very easy. They met each other. There was a deep connective flow. There was an ease of reference. There was a shared sensitivity for how the world is letting everyone down. There was a shared level of expectation. They have very deep ideas about everything, and they could talk about them. I wouldn't be surprised if together they really have a deep appreciation for the arts or for music or for aesthetics, etc. They have that kind of connective relationship. Now, their relationship is not without its own story here. There's no question. Their relationship is one in which they have to learn to give each other space, and they have to learn how to work together. They love doing things together, but sometimes they can get a little bit too much and they try to lead each other around. And we have two fairly strong people here, so it's not exactly easy to lead them around. Having said that, we also have two people driven mostly by inspiration and not just driven anyway. They like to be doing things that inspire them, and they're not always motivated to do things that does not inspire them. And therefore, we don't necessarily have parents who are get up and get it done, get up and get it done. But they might have unbelievable expectations for their children because they have very high standards. So I love the paradox and the dichotomy, isn't it?
Yep.
Yes, I want to sit here, go make it brilliant. Yes, I'm going to armchair lead. Right. So as a couple, right? Individually, they're very different. So when we look at how their children are interacting with them from a couple perspective, then I have to tell you that their children really take them on. There's no question.
You mean challenge?
Oh, absolutely. They're
challenging
and
this
I'm
dynamic.
Not convinced that they have the wherewithal to handle it at all. The dynamic is quite an explosive one. So we don't have the oldest children here. So like right now they're in good space because they have the control. When you've got a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old and a 2-year-old, you're in a lot of the power seat, aren't you? It doesn't matter how passive you are. It doesn't matter how undriven. It doesn't matter because you're calling the shots. It just is how it is. No one's calling the shots at you from an 8-year-old to a 2-year-old and everything in between. But wait till these kids are teenagers. This is teamwork here. This is a group of kids, even though there's 8 years between the first and the last, this is a group of kids that are very powerful, very demanding, very exact about how they want things to be. And they're going to give their parents a hang of a run for their money.
Pull them out the armchair.
There's no question. If they want to manage these children as a team, they're going to have to get off the armchair. They're going to have to get off the perspective and get into the play. Because it's very easy to sit there on the side and go, oh, what's the coach doing? Why don't these oaks do this? Why don't they do that? Why don't they move in there? I can get in the game or I make it happen. Bafana Bafana would love someone to jump in the game and make it happen.
Yeah,
yeah, maybe they would get a goal. Who said that? So moving on. We look at the individual children here, and we have children who are a mixture of driven and complacent at the same time. Now, try that with high expectations. So if you have high expectations and your children are both driven and complacent and only driven when they're inspired to do something and don't like taking instruction, just by the way, how are you going to just get them to do what you want them to do without batting your head against the wall? So with the two-year-old, we have a little person who is strongly, powerfully opinionated, has a very strong sense, coming up of how he is going to want to run this planet, and he's not going to be interested in taking the direction of others, and so they're going to have to manage him very cleverly by engaging his intellect. And if they don't engage his intellect, they won't stand a chance. He's a thinker, he's opinionated, and if you don't engage his thought processes, he's not going to respond to just sit there because I said so. He's going to want to know why must I sit here, why can't I touch this, why? There's going to need to be reasons there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of parenting, I find, happens without reasons. Just because I said so. No, I'm sorry, that doesn't cut it. You can write that down in lipstick on a mirror so you can't get it off. Just because I said so, stop cutting it a while back. Mm. It just doesn't bite. Mm-hmm. Not with the kids born from the 97, 98 onwards. It just doesn't. They don't fly. And all of us, I see you nodding and smiling. This generation doesn't buy that. Really? Seriously? You don't have anything better than that?
It requires time for explanation.
Exactly.
I've learned that lesson the hard way. Time for explanation.
Correct. That doesn't mean you get, if your explanation is not good enough, that you have to change your position. But it does mean that you need an explanation. Unreasonable no's don't cut it today. Mm. Don't come with unreasonable no. Mm. And also, the children are astute and they're bright. You don't have a child sitting and watching something on TV and you say, you know, my son the other day was watching something on TV and these children fell into this lava, this volcano, right? But they landed, of course, perfectly, because it's DSTV, and they landed perfectly on the side, and underneath them was this flowing lava pool, and so river. And I said to him, you know, if they really were in the volcano, I'll laugh at myself saying this because it was so ridiculous. I'm trying to be the educating mother, right? And I said to him, do you realize that if they were actually in a volcano with a lava pool river running beneath them, they'd be evaporated? I mean, the heat of that must be in the hundreds or thousands of degrees. And he said to me, no, seriously, did you think this was real? He's 11. He's like, obviously, they're just making a story. Obviously, you meant to
Mom.
Just buy along with it. He said,
Mom.
Do you realize the story of this is about two young kings who run an island? It's not real. It's just a story. So they're not fooled. They don't get bought into things, and they're not taken for a ride a lot of the time. And so where we come in, where we come in to try and educate, you know, you better come in with something good, because they're just not going to buy it. Mm. Like, you think you're offering something insightful and intelligent. And my son's done his own volcanic study on the internet because he was interested for a short while in volcanoes. You know, so he's got it. He's like, I know it's not hundreds of degrees, it's thousands. You know, so, oh, sorry, yes. Well, I just thought I'd offer that. Moving on, you know, so don't be coming at this child, 14th of December 2009, with just because. It's not going to work, because this child's going to have thought of already, just, I know that just because, give me a reason. Mm. And then when we look at the child, this girl, the 4th of July 2003, let's just think quickly, what country was established and finalized on the 4th of July?
The United States of America.
Yes, and how well are they doing? So when we look at this person, we look at a nation that has survived where, in all honesty, they shouldn't have. It's going to be the same here. They have unrealistic expectations, immensely high standards, and they have a mostly, if you ask me, very average community supporting that. Hollywood does not the American community make. Let's not kid. The average American doesn't know where Texas is. You know, studies will show that in New York they watch Channel 11 news, and that's New York news. I mean, that's one out of 52 states, way to go, and one country out of very many on a big planet. Like, hello, there is news outside of here. I studied in the States for a short while in 1993. I went to do a program at the College of Optometry there, and we stayed at the NYU dorms in the University of New York. And honestly, never in my life have I met such ignorance. Never. These were university students. And I sat and chatted with one of the guys for about half an hour before he said to me, so where are you from? And, you know, we got down from Australia to the United Kingdom to South Africa, and it was, South Africa, is that in Africa? I was like, yes. Is that near the Congo? I said, not very. And, you know, eventually we got down, it's the tip of Africa, and he suddenly clicked, and he was like, Africa. He's like, wait, are you having trouble with the English? And I said to him, no, but you appear to be. You know, we've been speaking for half an hour. Suddenly I'm having trouble with the English. I think I articulate quite well. What do you think? You know, so this is not exactly a, on average, very astute, very well-read population. In fact, the average population of Zimbabwe is incredibly well-read and incredibly well-educated. And yet here you have this country that has absolutely been a force amongst the planet. They've been a force. They're owing trillions of dollars of debt. They were in trillions of dollars when I was there. There was a counter in Times Square, and it was already at $4 trillion. I've got pictures of it in 1993. So they were in trillions of dollars, still running the planet with a self-righteousness and indignation that most people have to cower before. So now put that into one little person born on the 4th of July. Said enough? Yes, that's the power of that date. And obviously the backup year makes a difference. That country was established in 1776, which is a 3-year. And she is in a 5-year, so there is differences. There's no question. But she is not without her power. Make no mistake. No mistake. But
so what are you saying about it?
I'm saying she's powerful. She will endure. She will make up for where she lacks. She will have a very exacting, ideal nature about how things should be. And she will be demanding of the people with whom she's in relationships. And she will be giving and generous to the people who relate to her on her level and at the level she wants to. And she will most likely need to work on maintaining sensitivity to the needs of others. And we, you know, not impossible to see in the governance of the state of America. So it is a very interesting power to put into a little girl. That's what I'm saying. But it's there. And I actually have worked for many years in relationship with somebody born on the 4th of July. And equally as powerful energy and very directive. And so will she be. So will she be, unless her parents crush her, you know, which hopefully they won't. So if they don't tend her towards her greater inspirations, even though it'll be different to what other people want to do or expect of her, because she has her own story, as I like to put it, in a nutshell, there is a young girl here with a lot of power if she's driven in the way she wants to be. If you know, it's like water. It's like an avalanche. It's us. It's a powerful force when it's on the move. It's just very pretty to look at when it's not moving. So there's that. Okay. Now, the 24th of November 2001, we have this 10-year-old boy who's going to be turning 11 much later this year, who is very specific about needing to be very close and needing space. And he likes his home, and he doesn't like people to tell him what to do. But, you know, that's also indicative of many children. He doesn't like the guidance or the direction. And he's sensitive and compassionate and affectionate and generous of spirit and wants to help people close to him, and very much in the drama of things, and might tend towards drama and playing the victim when things aren't going his way, which is not fantastic. And obviously needs to be taught the tools of how to, one, maintain the sensitivities to the needs of others when he is hurt, and not completely withdraw and shoot an attack from above, which I call the Rapunzel theory. You know, people, when they're hurt and they don't know how to articulate it, tend to withdraw, and sometimes they withdraw into a tower, and from this Rapunzel position they shoot, and they're not always shooting blanks, they're very often shooting grenades and missile launches and etc., and they'll take out your whole village before you realize what has happened, you know. So now we put them up against their parents, and individually we can see there's like a whole lot of dynamics going on, but the family unit as a whole has a wonderful ability to become cohesive if there is a maintenance of compassion and generosity of spirit and kindness and an exchange of power. And it's interesting to say that between parents and children, because the parents might say, I'm not exchanging power with my children. They're in no position. I'm not talking about giving it away. I'm talking about giving empowerment so that your children don't feel directed by your insecurities, your feelings of inadequacy, your determination that things have to be X, Y, or Z. And if they're not, it's not good enough. You know, having said that, every child will have their childhood, and the people who have the childhoods that are the most strenuous and the most frustrating are generally the people who, when they begin to take responsibility for who they are as they emerge from that childhood in their adulthood, whether that's at 15, 25, or 50, will start to reach the highest level of potential. And it's that same story of the butterfly coming out of the chrysalis.
Mm.
If a butterfly comes out of a cocoon, it doesn't exactly go tap, tap, and it bursts open. Its wings are filled with fluid. It was in a mush for quite a while. It was in a soup. It was in a DNA soup. And it went in as a worm and it comes out as a butterfly. And there isn't change and it's not painful. For sure it is. And the most amazing thing is you think the end of that would be so pain-free. And it would just go tap, tap, and the cocoon would split open. But the chrysalis doesn't. It actually has to eat a little hole into it. It's about as much as it can get and drag itself out of there. And we all know the story. If you help the butterfly get out of there, you kill it because the fluid does not get drained out of its wings through the process of it forcing itself out of this tiny hole. It actually liberates itself. So I look at childhood and I say that everyone I know who's had a challenging childhood has had a hard childhood, a disappointing childhood, an unfulfilling childhood with tons of unmet needs, who has done the work to drag themselves out of their childhood and squeeze themselves through the hole of the chrysalis of their childhood, has emerged with wings to spread and being able to fly. But until you're willing to do the work it takes to get out of your childhood, whatever it looks like, no matter what the definition of it is, and take responsibility for who you are and spread your wings, flight does not happen.
Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Got a BlackBerry, iPhone, or Windows Mobile?
Did you know you can get Hi FM on it?
Do now. Visit HiFM.com and listen live.
This is In Your Element with Nikki Sabarini on 101.9 IFM.
Morning. Thanks for staying with us. Elvis Steam Engineer Bev Malun is in the studio and we're going to continue looking at the birth dates. Colleen SMS'd the 3rd of November 1980.
3rd of November 1980. Okay, let's go, Colleen. Brace yourself. So Colleen is this wonderful, nurturing, caring, social organizer who likes to get things done. She has a strong critical eye, and in relationships, Colleen, I'm going to warn you, not everything needs fixing. You want to organize, you want to go out there, Colleen, and organize somebody's function. That's fantastic. You need your critical eye, you need your amazing design to make things look pretty, and your completely unboundary thinking. Yes, go do it. It'll be phenomenal. With people with whom you have relationships, be it partner, parent, child, colleague, friend, it doesn't matter. Careful with that amazing critical eye. Careful with that ability to see where they're lacking. Not everyone wants to live up to your criticism or to your perspective on how they need to improve. But thank goodness, this is a wonderful nurturer and a person who can rely on the ability to make things pretty and the deep sensitivities and philosophy she has, and hopefully errs more in the side of sensitivity than she does in the eye of that analytical ability to just go, here's what's lacking, here's what's lacking. Great mind for an attorney type person, great mind for somebody who has to coordinate things and make them pretty. Like, there's a lot of diversity there. A lot of analytical power and a lot of very creative power simultaneously. So hopefully that's being used. And the biggest thing I'd say is just be careful of withdrawing to a point where you feel like you have the right to be critical, because that's a very dangerous precipice to put yourself at. And also, the higher the pedestal, the deeper the fall.
Mm.
Make no mistake, there are no pedestals left. And everyone climbing onto them is going to be knocked off them. This is not a century for pedestals. The next century for pedestals is coming. Just hang in there. You know, 3,000 if you can wait. But not this century. Sorry. Mm. This is a century for humanity to get it together and to bring it together and to flow and to climb off the pedestals and be amongst the people. Does that mean you shouldn't be significant? No. Does it mean you shouldn't rise up in your power? No. Does it mean anything? It means do it with the grace and humility that recognizes you're still part of humanity, not separate from it because of your achievements.
Does it mean that you should not be able to see what is wrong in others?
Absolutely. Absolutely not. We naturally see what is wrong in others. That's the nature of the beast.
Mm-hmm.
We are naturally far more critical of others than of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And what I am saying is keep it to yourself.
Okay. Okay. By the way, Gail, I so agree with you. How beautifully Bev described the analogy of the butterfly process. You know, Gail, I sometimes sit here and my mouth just drops open because of the words that come out of Bev's mouth. And so inspiring. I was very inspired by that as well.
Oh, good. Mm. Thanks, girl.
Okay, so let's move on. The good. What is it? The 12th of the 1st, 1946. Have you got that?
Yes, I have. And I'm going to be putting this up on my website. So if people want to listen to it again, they're welcome to go there into the audio in a few weeks' time and it will be up there.
Super.
I want someone else to hear it. So the 12th of January, 1946, we have a woman who just wants to rule the planet, honestly. And the only thing that would be holding someone like this back is the philosophies and the idealism and the almost unfair expectations that she puts on things to happen, on people, on how things should be, etc. And the frustration of that is when you have such amazing capacity to lead and to get things done, then you also have the capacity to be completely disorganized and to be held back by your inability to move forward with things. So there's that humbling paradox or outright frustrating paradox for this person. Mm. And what I'm hoping is that in her stubbornness, because there is a stubbornness there, and I know she's now going, ha, how did she know? But, you know, there's a stubbornness there, make no mistake, that in the stubbornness, she's using that to drive herself forward and not using that to hold herself back because she fears there's not going to be affirmation. People won't agree. They won't affirm. They won't recognize her for what she's done. Things need to be finished anyway. Don't be not finishing them because you don't think they're enough. Finish them and then fix them. No painting was ever finished first time. I seriously doubt Van Gogh or anyone else ever put down the brush and went, right, that's done. You know, they look at it, they stand back. Mm. They go, oh, touch, 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 touch. Look at it, stand back, go away for a day or two, come back. This dries, that dries, touch, touch, touch. Like, things need to be finished. Then they get fixed up.
Yeah.
You know, a marriage is not complete because you have a wedding day. That's just the beginning. The relationship as two people not committed on in that kind of union is complete, and now you begin a whole new chapter. But it's not done. The work isn't done. There's a whole new finishing that happens. There's a whole new creative process that happens. And so one of the things I see very clearly that can hold her back is the not finishing, because she's scared it won't be enough, it won't be perfect, it won't get recognition. And this is someone who wants to lead the way, but is socially insecure. So we have all these amazing paradoxes, and I'll bet we didn't have the easiest childhood either, coming out of the world war, being born just after it. Mm. There's a whole lot of expectation put on those kids. Please bring light to the world. Please change the world. Please make it better. It has been so dark for 10 years. It's been so horrific. Fix it, fix it. And a lot of pressure put on those kids with parents who were trying to find their feet, who were, in, for the most part, not every generation and not of people and not every people in the world went through that post-World War II. But certainly in the European communities, there was a huge amount of rebuilding. And the people who fled Europe and Russia, there was a huge amount of rebuilding. And my greatest sense is that's exactly what happened here. And so we have a young woman who was raised by parents who are trying to find their feet, who may very well have lost family, etc. There's a lot of pain. Mm. So out of that chrysalis, hopefully, is coming a woman who is still very much young enough at 65 to be doing what it takes to start spreading those wings and get the rest of the weight of that fluid out of the wings so they can flutter and they can lift up and lift you into the space you belong in.
Wonderful.
Don't stop yet. You breathe oxygen, you work. That's how it is on planet Earth.
We have so many more, which we're just going to have to invite you back once again next week, 9:30 to 10, and we'll just continue. And if you send through your SMS, and thank you so much for sending through to Bev. Bev, we'll work through them. Keep persevering, and hopefully next week Bev will be working on your numbers.
Fantastic.
As always, it's so interesting to listen to you, Bev, and everybody, even though you're working on a particular person's numbers, we're all learning from the information that you give us. So thank you.
Thank you.
It's always wonderful. Bev Malone, self-esteem engineer. Bev, your email address, your website, so people can visit you if people want to listen.
BevMalun.com, MILUN.
Wonderful. BevMalun.com.